Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about the Univention Corporate Server, which is a great way to have your apps be up in the cloud right where you need them. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 480, recorded April 18th, 2018. Univention Corporate Server. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, flexible and entertaining training for your IT career. Visit itpro.tv/floss and use code FLOSS30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off your monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and unaware of it, projects you might want to play with right after this show. I think today's going to be one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall, it's good to be with you once again.
And we gave you a couple-week vacation, but I guess you're back again, so.
Looks like it. I think I was the only person that had the slot free again, and I think today may be something that's in my wheelhouse, too. We'll see.
Oh, good, good. I like that because it's probably something Linux underneath, and I'm not very smart about Linux stuff. So hopefully you're smart about that sort of stuff and all that. If you were watching the video, you may notice that I am once again in my Tijuana kitchen set. So there are some refrigerator magnets over there that spell things out, which I haven't actually played with in years. I just leave it there. Apparently my friend's fiance, who used to live here with him, is arranged all those magnets to be a certain way. But that's completely irrelevant as far as the show goes. And looks like you're still in your Oklahoma den there.
Yes, yes. Here in the corporate headquarters, as I like to call it, the home office in the flyover state, Oklahoma.
Flyover state, yes. I think I figured out that I once went to Oklahoma, but I can't remember what it was for. All I remember was being near it at one point, but that's about as close
when you
as
go to South. When you go to stuff in Dallas and Houston, we're just a little bit to the north of you.
Yeah, yeah. I've been in that area quite a bit. So, yes, Dallas, those places, yes, very good. So, and yes, I'm sorry. I got to be careful touching my laptop because if I touch the keyboard a little too much, it bounces up and down. So I got to keep my hands up here or something. I don't know. I'll hide them behind my back. That'll work, right? So let's talk about today's show. Today's show is – scroll. I should have had that ready already – is the – Univention Corporate Server, which is, as far as I can tell, it's their tagline is server and IT management software to gain flexibility and control. And what I've been able to gather from looking at the website for about a half hour, which is about all I ever have to preview these shows, is that it looks like it's got a Active Directory domain service so that it can talk to Windows and Macs and Linux boxes to provide centralized authorization, authentication, that sort of thing. And it also has an app store. And so there's one-click installations for many, many, many popular packages. And there's probably other pieces to it as well, but that's all I could sort of pull away in the initial framework. There's it appears to be, as Simon Phipps would often give it, the name of an open core model, and that is that there is a piece that is completely functional and useful and can be downloaded for free and used for free with zero support. But then as you want to crank up the dollar value, get more corporate, you can get more and more services available from that. Again, that's what I'm gleaning from the website in just a short amount of time. So we'll have to ask questions about that. And I'm presuming it's Linux at the core. I'm presuming it's some sort of Linux system. It says it talks to Macs and Windows, but I think that's just the Active Directory part of it. I don't think we're actually installing Mac OS software from some app store of some kind or anything like that. So I think it's all about installing these open source Linux packages. So what do you know about this, Jonathan?
Well, one of the things I saw is that they use Samba 4 underneath. That's one of their components. And, of course, Samba is it's the replacement for a lot of the things that the Microsoft Server program or operating system does. And so it is. It's things like Active Directory, being able to manage users, share folders. And so I think from what I've seen, what they're trying to do is build an open source platform that allows you to run your entire network from Univision, from their software. And that's really interesting, because there's a lot of even small businesses that, you know, get tied down to using some big expensive Microsoft server program, you know, with all of the licenses and all of the junk that entails. And so if that's what they're trying to do, I'm very interested in that, and you know, looking forward to figuring out all of the ins and outs.
Cool. And you just said Univision, which I don't think you mean the Spanish channel, do you?
No, is that not the term? I didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night. So be prepared for all of those sorts of slips of the tongue.
I hope our guests will forgive us for that. But we are going to bring them on in just a minute. It's going to be Peter Ganton and Kevin Dominic Corte. We'll bring them on in just a second. But before we do that, I have a very important announcement. Because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Prepare your team for the most competitive IT certifications. From CompTIA and Cisco to AWS and Kali Linux, IT Pro TV has you covered with over 3,300 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training. New content is added daily, so your team will always be up to date. Conveniently stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on-demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC, or by using their iOS or Android apps. You can also download courses for on-the-go learning. Skip the boring voiceover slides snooze fest. Empower your team with interactive IT training they'll actually enjoy watching. Gain full control over your team's training schedule and track your team's results via IT Pro TV's Pro Portal. See metrics like logins, viewing time, courses viewed, tracks completed, and more. Whether you're looking for an engaging way to keep your team up to date or you want to accelerate your career, IT Pro TV offers effective and entertaining IT training. Simply choose a plan, create an account, and enjoy the journey. Visit itpro.tv/floss to learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution and to request a free team trial. Or sign up for an individual monthly membership with a free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/floss. Use the code FLOSS30 to receive 30% of your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Premium subscriptions, which include unlimited Kaplan IT training practice exams and virtual labs, are normally $857 a year, but you pay only $600 when you go to itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, ROI proven. Join the more than 90,000 IT Pro TV members today. And we thank IT Pro TV for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Peter Ganton. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Randall. Hi, Jonathan. Hi. Thank you for having us. It's really great to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm sitting in our Berlin office, which is located right above the Checkpoint Charlie, which probably many of your listeners know. And I really want to show this to you. So if you allow, I can show it. Are you seeing it? Are you seeing the US soldiers downstairs? So that's the view out of our window. We have a nice summer or spring, nearly summer evening here in Berlin.
Awesome, awesome. Let's also go ahead and bring on Kevin Corte. Kevin Dominic Corte, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm just outside of Seattle. No evening yet.
Let me say
sorry for my cold if I'm coughing in the middle somewhere.
Well, I think we'll both be competing on that one too. I've got a bit of a scratchy throat right now as well, so we'll see how that all holds out. So this question is for either of you. What's the 30,000 foot view when you're reaching for a Univention? What's the problem you're trying to solve?
I think you did it really good already. There's one little mistake in the stuff you read on our webpage. That is, we are doing completely open source. Every line of code we write and release is open source software, so it's not an open core model. But everything else you mentioned was really good. We are providing. Our core product is called Univention Corporate Server. It's an integrated open source solution for organizations to manage their identities, to manage access to applications, to manage, integrate, and deploy the applications they want to offer their employees or users or students, if it's a university or school, and also the networks and client computers, which we achieve using or with the Active Directory components in Samba 4. So I found everything we do very well explained by you guys. Thank you.
Well, then it was nice having you on the show. Just kidding.
Yeah. It's 45 minutes. No,
is this the kind of thing that I would use as a home Linux user, or is this sort of meet a particular sweet point at maybe like 10 people or 100 people using it?
So if you are just one person, probably no. What we see is sometimes families using Univention Corporate Server to provide cloud storage, groupware collaboration, chat systems, and stuff like this, possibilities to share data using our product. I would say it starts at maybe between 5 and 10 users. And then the customers are users. Customers who pay us typically are much larger. They quite often have hundreds or even thousands of users.
And how did this get started?
Well, good question. Thank you. So we founded Univention. It's called Univention, not Univision.
Yes.
We founded it in 2002, and the idea at that time was that was the time just after the new economy crash, when Linux and open source software got its first strongholds in the industry, where first banks were using open source software, where governments considered using open source software on the server side. And we thought the next big thing would be to use Linux on the client side, on the desktop. And therefore, our idea was if large organizations want to use Linux on the desktop, they have to manage it. They need an identity management, they need software distribution, they need application distribution and stuff like this. And that was what we started to build with Univention Corporate Server. In fact, I think the first 6 or 9 months, it was called Univention Desktop Server. And then we showed this to potential customers, and they really liked the web interface and the integration we did. And they asked us, well, that's a nice product, but can I use it with my Windows PCs? And then we said, well, that's not what it was intended for, but maybe that's also possible. And so it turned out that a lot of customers wanted to use it as an alternative to Windows Server operating systems, to Microsoft Active Directory, as an integration platform to the software they want to provide to their users.
So is this really, so I guess I'm misunderstanding this maybe, or maybe I'm understanding it. This is sort of intended as a way for a centralized staff to manage desktop Linux boxes, or is it more for managing server-side stuff?
No, your question has been, how did this start? And yes, we started with the idea to make Linux desktops better manageable, but then it turned out that the customers we were trying to sell this to told us that they really like the software, but they want to use it for identity management, for application integration, and they want to use the Windows PCs they were using before, and they didn't want to change this. So So today it's not a Linux desktop management solution in the first place, although you can integrate Ubuntu clients. We offer a small integration package for Ubuntu. It is to manage identities, networks, servers, and the applications running on top of this, and to integrate all this with each other and to deliver a consistent view of the environment to the end user. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to let Kevin get a word in edgewise here too. So Kevin, what's your relationship with the organization?
I'm heading here our US office and doing the technical parts actually. So more on the getting the customer set up with the software, having them integrate whatever they have, migrating users, and dealing with these kind of questions. So how do you get onto UCS? How do you make best use of it? And what's your added value once you have it installed in your company or in your organization?
And now I've got to channel Simon Pipps here for a second. So is this the kind of project that's basically being done by a corporation providing open source tools, or are you also starting to see a community where people are contributing patches back upstream?
I think it is absolutely true that we are by far the most active contributor of this. We have created this, and in the past at some point have. It would have been possible for us to make it easier to submit patches to this system. We started. We were using, for example, a subversion repository for years, which was not very attractive to outside developers. We migrated this to GitLab, I think 3 or 4 months ago. And having said all this, there is a community, and we receive patches, and we really would like to see even more activity here.
Hey, I want to jump in if I can. And
sure.
You mentioned GitLab, which makes me think about something.
Sorry, I meant GitHub. GitHub. We are using GitLab internally, and we are using GitHub GitLab internally, and GitHub is where we synchronize our repositories to, and from where we can receive pull requests.
These different projects and people using similar names, GitHub, GitLab, right. Univision, us poor folks get confused about it.
Yes, I know.
It is something. So Univision is doing identity management. Do you do anything with like single sign-on? So can someone have a GitHub or GitLab account, and then similar to how you can point that to a Facebook or a Google account, can you also say this Univention server over here in the cloud is my single sign-on for this?
Yes, that's exactly what it is intended for. We provide, of course, LDAP compatibility, Kerberos compatibility. You can use Active Directory authentication. You can use SAML. That's, I think, secure authentication markup language, which is supported, for example, by Salesforce, by Microsoft Office 365, or by Google GApps, and use the Univention corporate server for authentication. And we are planning to support OpenID Connect in the future here too. So yes, that's actually a way a lot of our customers are using our product.
That's very interesting. So when you have, let's say, specifically Windows machines that are connected on the Windows box, do they just see it as we're connecting to this domain and it speaks, I guess, SMB, the server message block underneath?
So Kevin,
yes.
Do you want to?
Sure. Yes, for the Windows client, it looks exactly like it would connect to an Active Directory. It's not anymore speaking really SMB, but it's more Kerberos and LDAP. But for Windows admin, it's the same domain join, and for the user, the same login. And if you then are logged in on a Windows PC or also on a Linux client, you can also use Zend single sign-on to not have to enter a password anymore for, as we said, GitHub or G Suite or things like that, but really get a single sign-on there.
Mm-hmm. So the server side of all of this, the Univention itself, what's going on there? Is that a Linux distribution that's running all of this?
Yeah, we are delivering a complete package which you can deploy to bare metal or to virtual machines. It contains a Linux distribution, and if you buy the product, we take responsibility for keeping it secure and up to date for a long time. It is based on Debian, GNU Linux. That's where I myself and many other people from our company come from. And then there's a lot of stuff integrated, like LDAP, open LDAP for user management and also for client machine management and network management. Samba to get Active Directory compatibility. And then there's the App Center, which was already mentioned, where you will find many enhancements, components, but also dozens of third-party applications, most of them open source applications too, but not all, which you can very easily install and integrate using the App Center.
Is that software, is Univention available as a container package so that we can, install it in something like Kerberos rather than bare metal?
Quite now, we offer virtual machine images. There are experimental Docker images available, I think, on Docker Hub, but they are not officially supported yet. Is that right, Kevin? I'm not completely sure on that.
Yes. If you go to the website, you can either download the ISO and install it in things like Hyper-V or KVM. There are VMware, KVM, and VirtualBox images, as well as AWS images. And the Docker images are tests, but they aren't fully supported, mainly because it's not yet clear how we proceed there or what the idea behind the Docker image would be. So you would have to go with a virtual machine if you really want to make use of all components.
And all those downloads are free, and someone can, right after the show, go and download the ISO or the image and start playing with it?
Yes, please do so. That's the reason why we are here, to encourage people to do exactly this.
Excellent. So what license is all of this packaged under?
So the code we write is licensed under the AGPL version 3. Of course, the components we use come with their respective licenses. So if you check out the source code, it's AGPL version 3. The binary package is a free-to-use commercial license.
Now, the AGPL, that's the Afero GNU public license, isn't it? What was the reasoning behind that choice?
So the difference between the regular GPL and the Afero GPL is that with the regular GPL, you have to publish your source code and make it available to others if you are giving the software itself to others. So if you distribute a binary package of a changed version of our software and it would be GPL licensed, you would have to give the source code to with that package or make it available somewhere. With the AGPL, you also have to make your source code available if you use the software to provide some commercial hosted service to others. So if someone would use our software to build a commercial cloud offering using our software, and then he or she would change the software and build its offering based on that changed version of the software. They would be required to make the changes of that code available too, and we think that's important to us because then we and others too could use these changes to integrate them back into the main product.
Certainly, I think probably this is for Kevin. So as the project sits now, if someone does have a Linux desktop that they need to bring on board, what does that look like? Do you still talk to Samba 4 and all of the? Do you connect the Linux machine as if it's a Windows machine, or what does the process look like?
Really depends on your Linux distribution here, but yes, for one, you could use it like you would connect Linux to an Active Directory. The primary example here is if you use SUSE Linux, that's probably the easiest to connect it. If you use Ubuntu or your own Debian derivative, then you would connect it like you would to a standard LDAP server, so Linux LDAP, and just use a different port there to talk to a standard compatible LDAP instead of to the Active Directory.
And then what about, I believe you also support Mac machines. What does that process look like?
For Macs, it's clearly the Windows join, simply because Apple did a lot more work on that end than for the standard Unix things.
Cool. Right, I think Randall wants to jump in.
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I do. So you're this package, the Univention corporate server. Did I say it right, Univention? Yeah, okay, good. I was going to say Univision this time. Because now it sounds wrong. Now that it's been said wrong a couple times. Like, okay, I'll get it back. I'll just say UCS from now on. I can't get wrong with UCS. So you're using a lot of upstream packages to build out your infrastructure here. You're also incorporating a number of upstreams in your App Store. Is that something that is the App Store primarily done by you in-house, or are people encouraged to make their own open source applications available in the App Store? What's the general consensus for how things get in there?
So we see it as our responsibility to make sure that the App Store as the system App Store works for us, for the customers, and for the vendors of applications. Then there are a few enhancements and tools which we actually maintain and bring into the App Store or the App Center. We call it the App Center. But most of the third-party applications like Copano, OpenExchange, Nextcloud, OwnCloud, Suite CRM, OpenProject, and many more are maintained by the vendors, by the makers, or by the specific open source projects, which make sure that they bring it into the App Center. So it's a shared responsibility here.
Okay, so because, you know, everybody's always finding security holes sooner or later. I'm just wondering if your update cycle allows for the vendor maybe to quickly update their version of the software in the App Center so that you have a minimum liability, right?
So that is independent of each other. The vendor can update his software whenever he or she wants, and actually we encourage them. And if we had cases where we had to delete apps from the App Center because the vendors were not maintaining them actively anymore, and we for sure did not want to provide unsecure software in the App Center. They can always update their apps, and we encourage them to do, and we send them not so nice sounding emails if they are not doing it quickly enough.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like a good strategy to use there. So what are some of the technologies that you're using actually in the core of your product?
Kevin, do you want?
Well, sure. So as we already said, it's built down on Debian 9, actually.
Sure.
And then the two core software packages are, I think, or the real core for the storage of the data is an open LDAP, which is running as a backend for all the user information, the configuration data. And on top of that, then you have Samba 4 for the Active Directory part. You have our own management interface, which is, of course, a website built on Apache down there. And then you have our configuration system for managing the user. And I think that's really the core down. Of course, there are lots of details, like the replication for data or connectors to outside software, but really the core boils down to Debian 9, OpenLDAP 2.4.5, and then the management interface.
Now, the management interface is primarily web-based, right? Is there also a command line interface so I could just SSH into the box and do some sort of operations?
Yes, there's a command line interface which provides more or less the same tools, just on a different interface. And there are also APIs for Python and available. So if you want to write real scripts or scripts which deeply integrate with it, you can use the Python interface to get Python code or any other bindings via that to work with the management interface.
Now, we talked about like 10 or 15 people kind of being the sort of smallest installation you like with this. What have you seen at the other end? What's been the largest comfortable installation of the software?
I wouldn't call it a comfortable installation in that it runs just without any maintenance. But the largest installation is used by Orange, the French telecommunications provider, and they use the identity management part of Univention Corporate Server to manage 31 million users. That's all their customers, where they provide email and other services to, and our identity management system is the identity management backend for this. So I think we can say it scales, but of course, you have to tweak a few things if you want to manage more than a million users.
So for that kind of loadout, what kind of hardware do you have to have for that? Is that like multiple boxes that all synchronize with each other for LDAP?
They have different data centers. I think they are running two replicated environments in two data centers, and in each data center, they have a number of virtual machines. I don't know exactly how much. Kevin, maybe you can help here.
I think we're 20 or so virtual machines which they're running, but there are more tasks than just the simple LDAP. I think the LDAP is a bit bored for them with three machines, but...
So there's probably other players in this space to provide identity management and an app store and things like that. Why would someone in particular reach for UCS rather than use one of the competitors?
So actually, if you are looking for an open source product which scales that well, which offer so many integrations, which offer so many integrations with so many different software packages, I think there's not that much competitors. Our main competitor, of course, is Microsoft, with Microsoft Server and Microsoft Active Directory and all the applications you can install on a Windows Server or integrate using Office 365. Mm-hmm. But as we all know, there's great open source software available to achieve all these tasks, and we see a growing number of organizations who actually really want to use this software. But for them, in many cases, it's quite hard to integrate all the parts with each other to keep them up to date and secure and to deliver a consistent experience to their users. And that's what our product is doing. There are, however, a few, I would call them single server, small business solutions based on Linux and open source. They sometimes are not completely open source. They, in some cases, do not scale very well. So they are more or less single server solutions. You can't run them on hundreds of servers and hundreds of locations with millions or thousands of users. So I think we have a quite good positioning in this space.
Okay, so I'm still thinking, how was it chosen to make this open source when you started? Were you around back then?
I'm not sure if I got the question completely. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. So this is open source, and the thing's open source completely from top to bottom. How did that decision come about?
Okay. Yeah, that's a very good question, because really at the beginning we felt quite unsafe to make it completely open source, and we started with an open core model, and we were a little bit reluctant to make it open because then somebody could steal it, quite soon we discovered that this does not make any sense. We can't tell people how great all this open source software is we integrate, and that they should use it, and that it will give them independence from proprietary vendors or proprietary cloud silos, and at the same time bring in a new proprietary system from a much smaller vendor. Then we thought, okay, we have to do the real thing. And back in 2005, I think, we decided to make it completely open source. And since then it is. It took our developers a little bit less than a year until they felt confident to make it open source. Mm-hmm. And I think other projects have made a similar experience that developers said, okay, if you want to open this, we really have to look a second time at the code. And this says also a lot about the quality of open source software, I think.
And I hope you weren't offended when earlier in the show I said open core, because I really didn't understand. You made that very clear now. This is not an open core project, so I appreciate that.
Maybe I can add a word here.
Sure.
I think it comes from the fact that the free version of Univention Corporate Server, which you can download, is called Core Edition. And so here you are at Open Core. But we call it Core Edition because it's at the core of our business. And of course, our commercial subscriptions include much more, like long-term maintenance, support, product liability, certifications, and all this stuff, which is not included in the free version. But the code is exactly the same in both versions and both models.
Wonderful. And Emily Lestrange just made this comment in our chat room and said, good to hear that they aren't hypocritical. It sucks when someone preaches open source but then keeps their own code closed source. So that's definitely the comment I was going to make too. So Emily, thank you for that, to phrase it so well. So appreciate that. How if you can tell me, how large is the organization now that's behind all this software?
We are still a fairly small company. We are about 50 people. I think right now 48 or 49. We have three offices. Our main office is in Bremen. That's the town where Becksbier comes from originally, so you may have heard about it. Mm-hmm. Here in Berlin, and a very small office that's basically Kevin in Seattle in the U.S.
Hey, I wanted to jump in again, Peter, if I could, and ask the App Center. It sounds like such an interesting idea. I don't fully understand how it works. Is this simply server-side programs, or are there client-side programs that go into the App Center as well?
It's server-side programs and its integration of, so there are some packages in the App Center which integrate the management system with cloud services. For example, there's a Office 365 app which helps you to set up all this integration with Office 365. There's a similar app for Google G Suite, but most of the software is server-side web-based software. There are also packages available for client management and software distribution to clients, for example, a package called OPSI, which is also available in the App Center. I think you had them in your show fairly recently, if I saw this correctly.
I was not one of the co-hosts on that show, and I have not gone back and listened to it yet, so I don't know for sure. So you're not looking, at least at this point, not looking to replace the Microsoft Store, if I understand that right.
Right.
Or the Windows Store, whatever they call it in the new versions of Windows.
No. So the IT environment of the future, which we envision, is that you can use any client and you will have all your applications on the web, either in your private cloud hosted in your organization or in a public cloud. You want to integrate this, but you don't want to distribute database front ends and stuff like this to clients, because then binds you to specific software versions. You have to use Windows. You can't use an iPad, for example, to access these applications. And so that's the way we want to go with our customers and our users. But of course, we know that the world is as it is, and there is software to be distributed. So we work closely with vendors in the open source space, making exactly this possible.
Certainly. Question for Kevin then. One of these add-ons that's available in the App Center then, is it possible to use UCS to host email and to do DNS management?
DNS is the easiest to answer. You more or less have to use UCS if you run UCS as the identity management for DNS. The reason behind it is that the Samba 4 component, like an Active Directory, is closely tied to the DNS. So the UCS does the DNS management for simplicity already of the installation. Hosting emails is probably the second question after identity management. There are groupwares available. There are simple Dovecot email servers, but there's also, I said groupware, Copano, OpenExchange, and it might be even more the problem to decide on what you want to do with your email than to actually find a solution there.
It's a great platform to check out all these different groupware and collaboration packages which are available in the open source space, because most of them are available in the App Center, and you can check them out there. And it's the second most important use case of our product.
So it's definitely in scope to use UCS to support several different smaller organizations and provide email for them. You know, you host their DNS, you host their email, maybe even host their websites. Is that something you could do off of a UCS server?
No, you would.
Yeah, Kevin, go ahead, please.
So if you think about it of a shared environment, then it would be a no. So UCS is really one server for one organization. If you're a partner company for a small software vendor who wants to provide to their customers a single server with groupware, with DNS, then that's where you would use UCS, but not if you want to replace a multi-client, multi-tenant email structure.
I
was just going to say that, let me put that as a little bug in your ear to think about that, because there's a lot of us small businesses that support a lot of very small businesses, and something like UCS might be very interesting if it supported that use case. You go ahead, Peter.
I just wanted to mention that we are seeing smaller managed service providers or cloud service providers which use UCS to provide these services to small businesses. They just run a very small virtual machine containing the environment for the customer. And that also has some benefits in comparison to a shared environment, because you can implement updates independently of each other. You can make changes and have specific configurations for a specific customer much more easily than in a shared environment. But of course, I know that there are a lot of very, very small businesses with 1, 2, up to 5 or 3 users using shared environments, and that is something we are not concentrating on right now. But we always think about it.
Fair enough. And then one last question from me before Randall jumps back in. What is the oddest or most novel use that you know of that somebody makes of UCS? What's the weirdest thing someone is doing with it?
That's a good question. I know that you are asking this sometimes, but we haven't thought about it. We do a summit once a year. Last time there have been about 350 people in Bremen, and there was one organization, and they showed us a self-contained system which they deliver to, I don't know if you may say this still, third world countries, mm-hmm. where they run solar systems, but I'm not quite sure about this. I would have to look it up. Kevin, do you know it? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I think it was a solar operated UCS version for things like a school yeah. environment where you drop down the box, put the solar panel on the top, and then have right. UCS OPSI for the client management, and basically have a small African school set up with a server with the learning data on it, and then with the clients.
Hey, I want to jump back in here with a couple more questions and then start wrapping up the show, because it's getting down to that hour. It's getting down to the bottom of the hour again. So I'm looking at the App Store here. And I keep calling it App Store because that's what it's called for iOS. Okay, so I'm looking at the App Center, and I see some of the projects here are like asterisk for UCS. So does that mean like a off-the-shelf asterisk wouldn't have worked, or has this got some special customizations so that it fits into your app model?
The vendor here, the company is called Deco IT. They deliver a vanilla asterisk, but also the package also includes all the glue code to integrate this asterisk environment into the management system. So Ooh. That you already have the users there, but after you have installed that package, you'll be able to assign phone numbers to your users or telephones to your users. So if you want to run a VoIP solution, you want to have it integrated with the identity management. And that is what this package does. So it's much more than just plain asterisk. And that's the reason they called it asterisk for UCS. I think they gave it a new product name. But it seems not to be there now, but it will be. It will have a new name fairly soon.
So I'm also looking at a little further down the list, OpenVPN for UCS, and I presume that's also going to be something that is customized to integrate with your environment.
Same thing. You have the users here, and you are able to manage which user can access the VPN. You will have all the VPN specific settings in the management system accessible using the web management system, but also on the command line integrated. So the for UCS typically means including the integration with the management system.
Are you installing packages under the hood using the standard, is it Ubuntu? What is it, Debian install system?
It's Debian. So we started that way, and there's still a number of apps where technically Debian packages are installed when the app is installed, but we are in the process of switching this to Docker, and most of the apps now deploy Docker images, and that makes things much more flexible and much more easy for us and also for the vendor of the apps.
Well, especially for conflict management, because if you have one package that requires Python 2, another requires Python 3, it's really difficult to get both of those to play well together. But thanks to Docker now, when we've got containers, everybody can just be happy and play along, right?
Yeah, we had a lot of problems with PHP, for example, with different PHP versions required by different apps. And it's also from a security standpoint, we don't have to give root access anymore to the Docker image, which is not possible with a Debian package you install on a system. So there's potentially more security possible. Yeah, it's much better in many ways. We envisioned something like Docker for a long time, and we were very happy when finally somebody did it and we could use it.
Well, so this project's been around since 2002. It's now 2018, as far as I can tell by looking at the calendar. So we've got 16 years into this already. What's still missing? What's on your roadmap?
Oh, a lot.
Okay.
We are just 50 people, and there's so much more. There's so much more things to do. So, for example, we want to support multi-Docker applications in the App Center. Right now, an app has to be contained in one Docker image, and some apps require you to run more than one container. We want to integrate OpenID Connect and make it much more easy to integrate modern cloud applications which cannot use SAML with Univention Corporate Server. We also want to use it internally with the apps. We are planning an administrator dashboard where where it becomes easier for administrator to see the health of their environment, which can become quite complex in large environments. What else, Kevin? What can you think of this? I have a list here. I have to look at it. There's so much. Multi-master replication is something on our list for a long time. Making the administration of the portal more easy. We did there quite a lot with the last release, but we are planning more. Having a RESTful API, so our Python API right now is not completely a RESTful API, is something we are planning. Kevin, what can we add here?
I think we are also looking more into cloud integration and cloud offerings. Because we're seeing that people are more and more getting away from having the pizza box standing somewhere in the basement.
indeed. So, go ahead.
Yeah, one other thing we are working on is making payments easier through the App Center. So we get a lot of requests from our customers and also from the partners which have their apps in the App Center, that it would be great if customers could buy the maintenance subscription for UCS and for OwnCloud or NextCloud or Corpano or OpenExchange using the same interface, the App Center. And we are experimenting there. Right now there's a Magento-based shop which can do a little bit of this, but we clearly want to go farther there.
And I'm just curious, what's your web stack look like? What are you using for your technology there? And I heard Apache, but what kind of programming language?
Python. So most of the stuff is done in Python.
Except for the web front end is actually PHP based. So The website is PHP and I think Dojo.
Since you mentioned PHP earlier, I thought probably that was what it was going to be. So not a win for Perl here, but that's okay. I guess I'll live with that one.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, it's the one thing I'm very happy about today's show, though, is as I'm staring at the app center, here we go.
Right.
I see I've only had about a third of these people on my show. So I've got a new list to pick through of active modern projects that integrate well with business activities and things like that. So I'm gonna be cherry picking this list. This is really, really rather cool. We're almost out of time, but is there anything we didn't get to that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
I think we covered most of the things we had on our list, and if you're happy and if you look at the App Center and need someone, let us know. We're happy to get you to them. But, yes, I think we covered everything.
Awesome.
I would like to add one point, and that is if one of your listeners has a cool business application which is not available in the App Center, they should come and speak to us. We are happy to work with them to bring their application in the App Center, and the platform right now is used by 8,000 organizations worldwide, so that's also a business opportunity for people offering commercial open source software.
Awesome, awesome. That sounds great. Two more questions for each of you. What's your favorite scripting language, and what text editor do you use? So whoever wants to start.
So maybe I start. I'm not really a programmer. I studied physics and psychology once, but I'm quite happy doing complex scripts in Bash. And I have been using Emacs in the past. Today, I mostly use LibreOffice for text processing and spreadsheets and presentations and stuff like this.
I'm very happy that you said Emacs, so that does actually make me a little bit more delight this morning. So this is really good. A little bit of me in every copy of Emacs, that's why, because I wrote the Emacs Lisp Pretty Printer, and Richard Stallman called it brilliant and had to have it included in the source code. So I am in every copy of Emacs. Yes. All right, and Kevin, same questions.
I'm more on the Python side, for scripting and for also for programs and. I've been for a long time using graphical interfaces, so I'm someone who uses KDE and Kate on the desktop here.
A perfect fair answer. Perfect fair answer from both of you there. So, guys, like I said, we're out of time. Glad to have you on the show talking about not Univision. That's the other guys. Univision Corporate Server, which, I got to admit, having looked at your website for a little bit and then and now talking with you guys, I can see that there's really a lot of depth to this, and I'm really happy you guys got to come on and take a chance to explain this to our audience. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Very good. That was Peter Ganton and Kevin Dominic Corte talking about UCS, not Univision. UCS, Univention. I knew you were only going to get away with that once, but there we go. So what do you think about this so far?
I was a little worried when I first looked at their front page on their website, because I saw lots and lots of buzzwords, which is sometimes terrifying, but oh my word, that is an amazing project. All kinds of potential there. I will probably be using this myself. I was asking about hosting email for different people. That's because that's a thing that I do, and I would, I think this would be a good fit for some of the things I do. So really super interesting, very neat project.
Awesome, awesome. And I'm not a Linux guy, so finding something where I can do one-click installs of some of my coolest features, and we didn't get to how theirs are configured underneath. They must have their own management interface for each of those things. Like, how would you configure Asterisk? I mean, there must be some way to talk to that. But that's okay. They're gone. We won't talk to them anymore. we have a show that's long enough as it is, so we could probably have gone another hour, probably, from what we wanted to do. All right, so moving forward, let's talk about who's coming up in the upcoming weeks. We have Chomper coming in next week, which is an internet blocking program developed for Linux. You define a whitelist or blacklist of websites, and Chomper will block you from visiting non-whitelisted sites or visiting blacklisted websites for the amount of time you specify. Clearly something I would never use because I would not want to give up my occasional ramblings over on Facebook and Google Plus and all the other normal places I go. Following that, PyPI, the Python Package Index, which is basically the, I guess, the equivalent of CPAN for Python. I know CPAN Perl, right? When I looked at this a few weeks ago, it was 134,346 packages there. So that sounds like a huge number. I think it's even bigger than CPAN then. Seagull, after that, Seagull is S-E-A-G-L, which is a grassroots technical conference dedicated to spreading awareness and knowledge about the GNU Linux community and free Libre open source software and hardware. It is a free conference. It's happening in Seattle on November 9th and 10th of this year. So I suggest checking it out. We will have, I think, the lead coordinator for the conference will be coming on. And I believe we've also already got Garrett, who runs his own little conference called Scale, is going to be on co-hosting for that show, so that'll be fun. Following that, we have the Lounge, which is a self-hosted IRC client. It's a fork of Shout, which I don't know anything about either, but I know that one's a fork of the other. Hubble Stack, which is a modular open-source security compliance framework. Project provides on-demand profile-based auditing, real-time security event notifications, automated remediation, alerting, and reporting. Very similar to what we had a couple weeks ago, Bob, but this is a different take on it. React PHP just got added last week, and it's the low-level library for event-driven programming in PHP. So its core is an event loop, on top of which it provides low-level utilities such as streams and async and a bunch of other stuff. Just added to the schedule sometime in the last couple days, KeyCloak, which is open-source identity and access management for modern applications and services. I think Simon knows a little bit about that stuff, so I might want to make sure that he is on the co-host list with that one. We have more and more always being added. Twit.tv/floss is the homepage for this show. Again, if you have other suggestions, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is right there on that page. We have a live stream. We're at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, unless we get moved for some reason. But typically, we're doing Wednesdays pretty well now. At live.twit.tv, we take a number of questions from there, particularly Emily the Strange comes to mind, a couple of questions from her. We can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. That's tweeted over to @FlossWeekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. And that tweets over to @Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. I am going to be shortly, I guess like about 3 weeks from now, I'm going to be at the Red Hat Summit in San Francisco in May. I have a meetup being planned for at least me and some of my friends there. So I think it's going to be on Sunday night, the May 1st or May 2nd, whatever that Sunday is in there. I forgot what date it is. So please watch my tweets, watch my Google Plus postings, and find out where you would need to be to meet up with me. Also be at the Perl Conference coming up in Salt Lake City in June. I will be representing Floss Weekly at both of these shows, looking for more guests, which is always fun. Anything you want to plug there, Jonathan?
I will just mention that you can follow me on Twitter @JP_Bennett. And any corporations out there, any people that are interested in protecting something like a UCS server, feel free to hit Cypherdyne up. You can hit me on Twitter or cypherdyne.com and get in contact with us, and we'll talk about it.
Cool. And thanks once again for stepping up to the up to the co-host microphone.
Shorten it to co-mic. That works.
Talk to us about Univision. Yes. Let me speak my Spanish. Well, I am in Tijuana, so there should be Spanish down here anyway, right? Hola.
There we go.
That's it. Got that all in there. All right. Thanks once again, Jonathan, for joining me for the show. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.